So this is going forward. Rujing, my late master, old Buddha, said, and this is a poem, the entire body is a mouth. And then in parentheses, it says wind bell. So the mouth is a wind bell. So the entire body is a wind bell. You know what a wind bell is, right? The wind blows and it goes ding. Like we have these chimes, right? The entire body is a mouth hanging in empty space. The entire body is a wind bell hanging in empty space. That's Rujing's statement about what we are. The entire body is a wind bell hanging in empty space. Regardless of the wind from the east, west, south, or north, joining the whole universe in chiming out prajna. Ting, 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 ting. That's so great. The entire body is a mouth or windbell hanging in empty space. Regardless of the wind from west, east, west, south, or north, joining the whole universe in chiming out prajna. Ding, 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 ding. Dogen says, this is an authentic air of Buddha ancestors speaking prajna. The entire body is prajna. The entire other is prajna. The entire self is prajna. The entire east, west, south and north is prajna. So there is nothing that is not prajna. And there is nothing that is not chiming out prajna. So expressing its nature is one way we can understand that. And its nature is wisdom beyond wisdom. But how does it come to be itself? So, Shakyamuni Buddha said, Shariputra, sentient beings should dedicate themselves and pay respect to the prajna, just as to the living Buddha. They should reflect upon the manifestation of prajna, so reflect upon emptiness, reflect upon boundlessness. They should reflect upon the manifestation of prajna, just as they dedicate themselves and pay respect to the Buddha, the world-honored one. Why so? Because the manifestation of prajna, emptiness, right? Because the manifestation of prajna is no other than the Buddha, the world-honored one. The Buddha, the world-honored one, is no other than the manifestation of prajna. The manifestation of prajna is itself the Buddha, the world-honored one. The Buddha, the world-honored one, is the manifestation of prajna. Why so? Shariputra, unsurpassable complete enlightenment of all Tathagatas has emerged from the manifestation of prajna, has emerged from emptiness. This is the Buddha's teaching. Shariputra, bodhisattvas, great beings, pratyeka Buddhas, arhats, never returners, once returners, stream enterers have all emerged from the manifestation of prajna. Shariputra, the 10 ways of wholesome actions in the world, the 4 stages of meditation, the 4 samadhis in formlessness, and the 5 miraculous powers have all emerged from the manifestation of prajna. Now Dogen is speaking. Thus, the Buddha, the world-honored one, is the manifestation of prajna. The manifestation of prajna is all things. All things are aspects of emptiness, not arising beyond arising, not perishing, not defiled, not pure, not increasing, not decreasing, just like we chanted in the Heart Sutra. To actualize the manifestation of prajna is to actualize the Buddha, the world-honored one. Look into this, says Dogen. Study this. To dedicate yourself and take refuge in the manifestation of prajna is to see and uphold the Buddha, the world-honored one. It is to be the Buddha, the world-honored one, seeing and accepting. So this is unequivocal in Dogen's teaching. There is no question. There is no doubt here. To be the Buddha is to be the manifestation of prajna, or boundlessness. To be boundlessness, or emptiness, is to be the Buddha. To be this body, which is a mouth, like a windbell, hanging in empty space, right? Making the expressions of our nature. This is the form, the manifestation, the expression of the manifestation of prajna, or of emptiness. He's being very, very clear here, even though it may sound a little, you know, the language is a little funny, but he's being very clear about this. And the last line is very important. He says, it is to be the Buddha, the world-honored one, seeing and accepting. And this last word is very interesting. Accepting. Seeing. Okay, so discerning the true nature, the unifying, I haven't thought it this way before, but it's occurring to me, the unifying universal nature of all things, which is the manifestation of prajna, which is emptiness, is to discern it and accept it. And accept, in Japanese, in the Japanese of Dogen, means full realization. It means to hit the mark. It means enlightenment. You understand it? So it's not just like, oh, okay, I accept it. It means this. It means nothing is held back. 100% completely expression of the nature of reality, which is emptiness, or the manifestation of prajna. It's a very powerful statement that Dogen is making here. And he quotes the Buddha's teaching and said, this isn't just my opinion. It's my experience, but it's not just my experience. This is the teaching of the Buddha. And the Buddha is saying that to be the manifestation of prajna is to be the Buddha. And to be the Buddha is to be the manifestation of emptiness. I have no question about it. So, I love the part where he says the entire body is a mouth or a windbell. No, you can see the body as a kind of like big airy thing, you know. Here's the windbell, right? Where our breath is the sound of the wind coming out of the bell. You know, we follow the sound of emptiness. Our body is empty. The sound we make is based on emptiness, and all of this is a manifestation of the true nature of things, of wisdom. Beyond wisdom. So Dogen is being very clear in this last section here. He's sort of led us to that phrase. And to really actualize it, he's saying, to really actualize it means to see it, so to discern very clearly, have no question, no matter what you are looking at, joy, pain, suffering, Buddha, asuras, which are fighting spirits, you know, demigods, people you love, people you hate, the entire self, the entire other, the entire me, the entire you, all form, all boundlessness, everything is unified, or means made one, right? Is made one by this manifestation of prajna, by boundlessness. So when we understand this intellectually, we can begin to think according to this understanding. Oh, so when I see the flower, I think it's a beautiful flower, but I understand what it is. It is a manifestation of emptiness. It is interdependent functioning that has constellated for now in the form of this flower. When I see a David, I see David. Form is form. But I know that the form that I see is a manifestation of prajna. I am looking at this manifestation of prajna. I see it. Form is form. Form is boundlessness. So I can see David is form. David is proof of boundlessness. He is the living evidence of boundlessness. He is the living evidence of prajna. Everything is the same way. So we can ask ourselves, okay, I'm beginning to get the idea about it. How does it help my life? What does it make possible in my actual experience of living? Because otherwise, it's just fancy talk. It's just talk. You know, we might as well be saying we're going to fly off into outer space and turn into a, you know, I don't know what, you know, turn into a pinwheel or something. Spin beautiful colors. You know. This has to matter. So the question is, how can it, even in the slightest way, how can it make a difference in how we approach our lives? Because this is a foundation. This is fundamental to our practice. This is not just something off on the side that Dogen got interested in for a while. This is absolutely at the foundation of Zen practice. We chant it every day or every week, whatever your practice is, in the Heart Sutra. That's what we're talking about. That's what this is about. This is about the content of the Heart Sutra. The Heart Sutra was written in 8,000 lines originally. That's what this is about. So my question is, even having some intellectual grasp, how does it help your life?
Are you looking for an answer?
I can't hear.
Are you looking for an answer?
I'm looking for a discussion to hear, because it's you know, I'll start it off. Okay, this is the diamond that cuts through the delusion that keeps attachment so tight on us. In other words, it cuts through our idea that the form of things is just the form of things, that things are only that. So the whole idea of self, of what something is, actually expands. So I look at you, Heather, and I see Heather, but now I know something more about what you are, and it's no different than what I am. So I can honestly say, you are Heather, I am Peter, and we are each other. That's different. That's a different way to live. And that's why we can honestly say it, because we have some foundation in it. So that's one example. So how can it help our lives? Yeah, Bill.
I can't get there intellectually. I mean, I understand. But,
yeah, right.
But I'm not there.
Right.
So, but what I found is that I haven't been here for the last few things, but I've been studying that sutra as well. Mm-hmm. And the thing that always hit me was the first word, Avalokiteshvara. Mm-hmm. And knowing who that is, was,
mm-hmm. Right.
And the compassion and loving kindness helps all to awaken. Mm-hmm. So I go, okay, hang on a sec. Let's try some of that, mm-hmm. Right? Because that's something you can do.
Well, you actually have taken a vow.
That's right.
Called the Bodhisattva vow.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why you're wearing that raksu.
Yeah.
And helps all to awaken is a interpretive definition of the word bodhisattva. Uh-huh.
And then sees that all five streams of body and mind are without boundary.
So there's the discernment.
Yeah.
Right there.
But at the path in through loving kindness, mm-hmm. opens to actually experiencing this thing that you're talking mm-hmm. about.
So one, you haven't said it, but what I'm hearing, despite that you haven't said these words exactly, is that because of the foundation of emptiness, compassion and love and kindness, which also are empty by nature, right, can naturally extend out of that ground. Because it's just self taking care of self, big self taking care of self. So the connection is immediate, it's right there.
Yeah.
As opposed to having to cross a boundary to something else, but there is no else. So that's one way that even having an intellectual grasp of emptiness can help.
Yeah.
Practice our vows.
Yeah.
Yeah. Heather, were you going to say something?
Yeah. To me, prajna is an equalizer. It's a ground leveler, so to speak, or a space opener. I mean, it's, once we understand the depth of prajna and accept what is for mm-hmm. what is, mm-hmm. then there's less self, so there's going to be a lot less of that grasping, mm-hmm. a lot less of the things that cause the suffering in the world mm-hmm. when we're not so concerned with the self and mm-hmm. what we want and what we're grasping for and mm-hmm. what we feel we're lacking. When we're more in tune with our true nature and prajna, then we can think, it just expands our mind beyond ourselves and our own petty little needs or wants, and sort of allows us to view things from a broader place, with a broader perspective.
Mm. This phrase you used was really great. We see what we see, basically things as it is, as Suzuki Roshi said. We see what things are. Mm-hmm. We see what things are. We no longer are restricted on our view to what we need to think things are. We actually can see what things are beyond our view, beyond even our personal or egoic needs. That's why I said it cuts through the causes of attachment and helps us. So if we know what something really is, then we can see all the blocks we put between ourselves and what something really is. And then we can have an appropriate relationship. It's called in reality. Don't mistake this. Dogen is talking about the nature of reality. That's what he's teaching. It's very heavy to say that, but that is what he's teaching. This is his view, and this is actually the foundation of our practice. Yeah, David.
I always find Dogen really hard to get until I talk mm-hmm. about it, like in
right.
sessions, and then it seems to unfold and make mm-hmm. sense. But does he have any statements about why this matters? Like, does he make that connection?
Well, I mean, in Shobo Genzo, he makes it clear, if you want to know true self,
just do what he's
you know,
saying.
Then, if you want to know true self, then you must experience yourself
as
in your empty nature, and you will experience not only the manifestation of prajna, which is emptiness, but you will know in a way that's not intellectual, prajna itself. Wisdom beyond wisdom, because it takes you to the root of what you are. And that's why Dogen always says, study this intimately. And the word study that he uses in the medieval Japanese means practice. Practice this without a gap. Like no place to slip out. 100% completely. Give yourself to this completely. And you will not only in some kind of way, you know, be who you are, but you will be fully expressive of your nature and its root, which is prajna, and the manifestation of prajna. And that is a different way to live. And if you can do that, then all vows are accomplished. Yeah, Simone.
Well, I was just going to say, I think it's important to realize this is not an idea.
It's not an idea. That's right.
It's not an idea. What he's talking, he's coming from that, from practice.
That's right.
It's not like an idea saying, you know, this is what you, you know, like that you have to strive for. Like, well, you have to, but it's definitely, it's practice itself. So mm-hmm. if, because sometimes we can get a bit, I know for myself, you know, you get caught in the idea and then all of a sudden you're not there.
That's
you know?
Right. Yeah.
So it's really good to realize that it is the heart of practice.
Yeah. It's great that you say it. Great. It sounds like an idea. We're talking about it like an idea. It's not an idea. Dogen is saying, it's your nature. It's what you are. Mm-hmm. It's what things are, as Heather said, right? Mm-hmm. There's an isness to it. Mm-hmm. Because of, you know, you've heard me talk and other people talk about Dogen's fascicle, Uji, time being. Because of this, your being is time itself. Time is your being itself. Space is your being itself. Your being is space itself. In other words, there's no separation of it. You want to know what those things are? It's you. So when you practice it without a gap, the totality, and this is a grand statement, but I want to make it, the totality of what is real becomes apparent as your life. And then you live from there. Here's one way to possibly think about this. In Tibetan Buddhism, it's taught that every, I'll just say dot, iota of space, at one time or another, was, is, or will be your mother. That's emptiness, right? In other words, every single dot of space in either has, is, or will give birth to you. What makes that possible? Is manifestation of prajna, is the interdependent function of all things. But if you really take that teaching in and you realize every bit of space is, was, or will be my mother, you might move through space differently. You might not be so aggressive. Does that make sense to you? Not just sort of your birth mother, but she also is, you know, made from your mother, right? But you might actually start to feel this connection of everything is constantly giving birth to me. That's different. Then will you think twice about how you go living in the world? We in the West, we call that Mother Nature. That's our nice way of saying it. Our view of it may be as expansive as it is in Buddhism, but you know, we say Mother Nature, so we mean that nurturing, nourishing, you know, fact of what it makes life possible. That's how we talk about it. But think about every, my hand is touching, my eyeball is touching, my mother is embracing everything. That's different. If you take that now to manifestation of prajna, to emptiness, and you realize, oh wow, okay, this is, I am in touch with what in the West we call the creation, constantly. And when in Zen we talk about the great matter of birth and death, this is birth and death, everything, everywhere, all the time. Without rising or falling, perishing, without purity or defilement, just the constant birthing. That's what I'm in touch with. Suddenly, your life starts to feel a little different, and the way you treat life starts to feel different. And your bodhisattva vows, they suddenly are just so obvious. Couldn't be more obvious. Because the entire self and the entire other, these ideas, there's no separation. Yeah, Hanika.
I like, there was like a new piece in this, mm-hmm. but you know, like you talked a lot about emptiness and boundlessness, mm-hmm. you know, but today there was a sentence in there saying that, you know, it is the Buddha, you know, so it's like emptiness is prajna, is the Buddha, mm-hmm. so.
That's right.
And, you know, I knew we're on a Buddha nature, but there was something that made it a little bit clearer there. Mm-hmm. Because there's that place when you take a big breath in and you practice and you just feel that boundlessness in the Buddha nature. But there was mm-hmm. something that was really clear. What I find you know, having, you know, been steeped in these thoughts for, you know, a while now, and I have some kind of inner pendulum or conflict or something going on from like my upbringing, and you know, I was very from my family. I got some really early programming around being good and being bad. You know, mm-hmm. I really internalized a lot of stuff around being bad.
Mm-hmm.
And in a, even though I grew up in a very secular way, it's still a Christian culture.
Mm-hmm.
So this whole idea about original sin is so based, like it's such a fundament of Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I'm always, you know, and that sort of with my family origin stuff, with me being bad, like there's some link there, you know, there was some almost comfort in that original sin with me being bad. And, you know, so there's some place of real comfort in me and feeling bad. So there's something really, I guess, radical about this, you
mm-hmm.
know, about really sort of every layer where I embrace that concept of Buddha nature, complete boundlessness, and you know, it's all good. Like it's all, there is no like, yeah, this part's good and then here comes the bad. Like we're kind of used to this distinction, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's heaven and hell, there is sin and, you know, whatever. And
yeah.
Here it's all boundless.
Yeah. Well,
there's
it's why I said this is the unifying.
Mm-hmm.
Right, the one making.
Mm-hmm.
Right, the one making foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Of all practice. It's very, very different. Dogen, I wrote about this in the introduction to Essential Dogen. Dogen's answer to original sin is original wholeness.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's his answer to it. He, of course, he didn't say that, but
yeah.
It's this is my understanding of it. But rather than this idea of original sin, that, you know, once we were whole, then we were not.
Yeah.
And we just got to really work really hard to be forgiven for that.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean we're whole again.
No.
Right. Okay. Dogen's statement basically is there's no point at which you're not whole.
Mm-hmm.
And you suffer because you don't realize that. So, to have full realization, seeing and accepting, as he says here,
mm-hmm.
right, to have full realization, right, is to allow that wholeness simply to be expressed through your life in the world. We have to stop, but I'll just maybe, I'd like you to keep, kind of ask this question. How does this help, really? I received an email from somebody, I don't know who he is, but apparently he asked me a question once, some time ago, and I answered. He liked it, so then he wrote to me again and said he had been working with this answer I gave him, and now he finally realized that everything was perfect. Everything was complete perfection. And that his job was to make the perfect world more perfect. So I wrote back and said, well, I have a slightly different understanding. Because you cannot improve perfection. So if you are perfect, then maybe your job is to find a way to express that perfection in a way that is beneficial in the world. Maybe just consider that. But you will not make the perfect world more perfect. That's a delusion, and it's rooted in your ego that believes that you have that kind of power. So he wrote back and said, now I have more to think about. But in a way, this is what, you know, this was actually the discussion, Hanukkah, that, you know, it's like, oh, okay, now I have to make it more perfect. Now I realize I'm perfect too, so I can make it more perfect. You know, we're always sort of making up for something. And Dogen is saying there's nothing to make up for. And as Wendy just chanted, Buddha nature pervades the whole universe, existing right here, right now, in chanting the sutra on the heart, realizing wisdom beyond wisdom, etc., etc., etc. And we dedicate this fact to our great kind teacher, to our first woman ancestor, to the list of people who need wellness. What are we dedicating? We're dedicating wisdom beyond wisdom. We're dedicating the foundation of prajna. That's what's happening. Why? Because Buddha nature pervades the whole universe, and therefore our practice has some benefit in the world, whether we see it or not. It's absolutely fundamental to Zen practice. So we should stop because we have boundaries that we have to attend to in this boundless world. I'll just end this part by saying this. I love Kaz Ta-Nehisi's understanding of boundlessness, of realization, which is that we understand the boundless nature of all things, but we live according to the ordinary boundaries of human society. So we don't pretend, oh, it's all boundlessness, so I can do what I want. In other words, form and emptiness working together. It's a wonderful way to understand how to use this understanding of emptiness or of boundlessness, the manifestation of wisdom beyond wisdom. Yes, it's all boundless, and I will stop at the stop sign. Period.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
Or I'll leave that statue in the museum.
Yeah, I will leave that statue in the museum. It's why Joshu, this great Zen story, a monk came to him and said, Joshu, I've been studying with you for 3 years now and I've got it. So of course Joshu knew, okay, this guy's in trouble. I've got it. Oh, what do you have? He said, it's all an illusion. I'm an illusion, you're an illusion, the Buddha's an illusion, Dharma's an illusion, everything's an illusion. So Joshu just hit him right in the face. He knocked him down. And the monk looked at him and he said, there, is that an illusion? Right? The idea of emptiness meant actual form. Which was actual emptiness. It's a funny story, but I'm not suggesting you hit people. Okay, we should stop. Thank you.